For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Morning Show. The Home Team. No, it's both. It's the crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Spring.
Crossover, step back!
Presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville, right here on 960theref.com.
What's up, everybody? Happy New Year. Sam Franco and Chris Brain back with another edition of the Crossover Podcast right here on 960theref.com. And we're not alone. We're bringing along a sponsor. That's right. Thanks to Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville. They're jumping on board to present us to all of you out there.
Yeah, I mean, pizza is perhaps the best meal there is. I mean, what can go wrong with pizza? Virtually nothing.
Yeah, and they got great ones over at Fully Loaded, the Home Team, the Walter White. I mean, come on, they named a pizza after Breaking Bad.
Yeah, I mean, and we got to get one now, Sam.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The crossover pizza, we'll figure out what we're going to put on that thing. But we are very appreciative to Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville for jumping on with us. And with that announcement, I'd like to throw out our very first Fully Loaded question of the week. Normally, these are going to be presented by listeners, so if you would like to get in your submission for the Fully Loaded question of the week, please email 960theref@coxradio.com, and we'll pick the best one every week and throw it out there. But since this is a new feature and we have not thrown it out there yet, I will be presenting to you the first ever Fully Loaded question of the week, and it comes to us after the national championship game where Clemson just boat raced Alabama. Nick Saban's most embarrassing loss as a college football coach, at least at Alabama. I know that there was a similar scoreline when Georgia beat LSU here in Athens in 2004 when Nick Saban was was LSU's head coach. And then there was a Bills-Dolphins game that Saban lost by this much, too, with J.P. Lossman as the Bills quarterback when Saban was coaching the Dolphins. So here's the Fully Loaded question of the week. Is the Alabama dynasty over?
Absolutely not, Sam. They first of all, let's take a look at a couple things last night. They had over 400 yards of offense against a great defense.
They just had a lot of mistakes in the red zone in areas where you can't have those mistakes.
To me, it's like basically they had five turnovers. They were 3-for-6 on fourth down, so there's your three of them. And then they had the two real ones that Tua threw. One of them was a pick six, and the other one to me was the real backbreaker of the game because Alabama was running the ball effectively against a Clemson defense that was historically one of the great rush defenses of all time, gave up 2.5 yards a carry, and it's 21-16, and they're driving again, and then Tua throws that ill-advised pass. Clemson picks it off. They run it back to about midfield, and then just like that, it's 31-16.
Well, the DBs baited him, too, because they came up like they were kind of in, like, press or, like, a tight coverage, and then they all backed off, and I think – Kirk Herbstreit was saying he threw that ball before he saw the protection.
But they, you know, this is a team too that this year had more. They had to deal with more massive turnover from their coaching staff. I mean, their defensive coordinator now is really in place because he's a recruiting ace, Tosh Lupoy.
And I think he's either gone or takes a different job on that staff. You know, I think Saban may look to replace him. I don't know if he ends up being a recruiting coordinator or something, and I don't know if he would even take a different title. You know, he may want to just leave and go somewhere else. Then this is all just speculation on my part, but they're gonna have to deal with more turnover here because Mike Locksley, their offensive coordinator, is leaving, and he's taking old Butch Jones with him to Maryland.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if Maryland is, with the trend of let's just hire a Nick Saban assistant, is Maryland aware that Mike Locksley has been a head coach before? His career record is 3-31. I don't know that the Big Ten is really quaking about that one, but so all that stuff is added up. You take the turnovers away. I mean, they had a 400-yard effort last night against a great defense. The massive turnover they've had on their coaching staff. They did just sign another, like, elite recruiting class.
Yeah, number one or number two, maybe, depending on who you look at. Georgia has a good bit more five stars than they do, but they have more overall players.
Yeah, no, the Alabama dynasty isn't over. And as much as I have to confess that ultimately last night, you know, when the wrestling the whole time with, like, all right, what is the outcome we want as Georgia fans? Do we want to see Alabama win another national title, or like one of our oldest arch rivals win a second for a third year with a quarterback from the state of Georgia? And I have to admit, sitting there last night and watching it, I was really enjoying seeing Alabama getting the crap beat out of them. But then I started to think about, all this is going to do is just sharpen their resolve again, and Georgia will have to deal with that in the SEC championship game in December.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's what's going to happen. What's next for Alabama? Because Chris Fowler even asked, what's next for Alabama? Here's what's next for them. They're going to go 12-0 next year, and they're going to play in the SEC title game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And we'll dive into Georgia and what is next for them coming up a little later on in this episode of The Crossover, brought to you by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville, as we continue to discuss the Fully Loaded Question of the Week. And yeah, I agree. The Saban dynasty and the Alabama dynasty is not over by any stretch. Dynasty is a weird word to use. So even kind of breaking the question down further, is Alabama in danger of, you know, taking a step back? No, at least not in the near future. And for a team that has continued to deal with the turnover and things like that, I'll be intrigued to see where they go on the offensive side of the ball now that, you know, Mike Locksley is gone. And I thought that, as this sort of thing where he brings in a coach that has like a bad reputation or coming off a bad something and then just kind of turns them around. I thought because Sark was going to be their offensive coordinator before the Falcons came calling, so I thought Butch Jones might be a candidate, but he's going with Mike Locksley to Tennessee, or I mean to Maryland.
I assume he'll just promote that Dan Enos, who was there this year working as their quarterbacks coach, mm-hmm. who was Bielema's OC at Arkansas, and really a guy Kirby wanted to hire when he got the job here, but Arkansas wouldn't even let him interview.
So he just took, Sam Pittman,
Sam Pittman instead. So I assume Enos is just going to be the guy that's going to end up in that offensive coordinator role. But I would be interested to see if he's going to leave Tosh Lupoy as defensive coordinator. I know Saban wants to keep that guy around for his recruiting prowess. But so does he bring in another guy and just leave him, your co-defensive coordinator, but someone else is going to call the plays? I don't know, but you know, that really seemed to be, he's lost all these coordinators over the years. And in this case here, he just seemed to elevate these ace recruiters into those roles. And last night, this is a national championship game against Clemson. I mean, you know, they basically met their match in the one team who could maybe take advantage and exploit that. There aren't too many out there. I still believe Georgia's one of them, but, you know, the Dogs still have to get over that ultimate hump against those guys, because they didn't in two opportunities last year.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, Georgia set the table for Clemson on how to beat Alabama, because if you watch those two games, the SEC championship and the national title game, Clemson's game plan of attacking Alabama was very similar to Georgia's. I mean, it was a lot of passing, because what did Jake Fromm do really well against Alabama? Carved up that secondary.
Yeah.
And that's what Trevor Lawrence did, and I think a lot of it was, again, that game plan presented by Georgia. And I know Dabo Swinney would never admit that a big rival helped him win this game, but I'm sure him, that coaching staff, and Trevor Lawrence were all watching that Alabama secondary give up chunks of yardage to Georgia and probably licking their chops a little bit because of their elite passing game.
And, I mean, they were able to establish the run against them, too. And that's the thing about the
Etienne is a very underrated back.
Yeah. The thing about that Bama is they've got that Quinnen Williams there in the middle of that line. But overall, their front seven certainly isn't as imposing as it had been in the past. And they're very young in the secondary. And, that's been like Saban's deal when it comes to his defensive backs. Those guys don't get a lot of help. I mean, they're locking guys down one-on-one, and that was a young secondary that certainly got exposed last night, although they were getting exposed by a freshman quarterback and a freshman receiver from the state of Alabama, that Justin Ross who got away. I mean, that just adds more to the the angst of the Bama fans.
And
today,
those back-to-back ridiculous catches that that guy made on the sideline. I mean, the one where he bobbled it and was able to pull it in, and then almost like a play or maybe two plays later, they throw it back to him on the sideline, and he reaches out with one hand and pulls that ball in. You're like, what the hell?
Yeah, I mean, that was unbelievable. I'm watching, like, Trevor, both of those guys last night, I'm watching them and thinking, you know, they're freshmen, so they're at Clemson for two more years, too. Yeah. I'm like, I'm guaranteed those guys would be, like, high draft picks right now.
No, Trevor Lawrence would be the number one overall pick in the NFL draft if he was coming out right now.
And that Justin Ross reminded me of A.J. Green.
Yeah, just great hands. And, you know, a lot of this powerful Clemson offense, it makes you think about the plays and things that Nick Saban did in this game, including the fake field goal. And I think Saban knew. I mean, he knew that his defense was going to struggle and that they were going to have to put up a lot of points. The problem with that was that play didn't fool anyone. Because here's the thing. Bama was down 15 when they did that. A field goal would have put them down 12. So still a two-score game. The math, like, I'm sitting there watching the game and they run the field goal unit out. I'm like, the math doesn't add up here. Like, going from being down 15 to going down 12 doesn't really do anything for you. You know, it's still a two-score game in theory. So it was just a very strange run out. And then you could tell Clemson wasn't fooled at all by it because of the defense that they were in or that kind of base. And so instead of calling a timeout, you know, he pulled a Kirby on him. He should have called a timeout and just blew up the play right there. Instead, he went forward with a play where you've got your third-string quarterback running behind your kicker as a lead blocker into the gap, and Clemson wasn't fooled at all. It was just a poorly designed play, a poor time to call it, and didn't fool anyone.
It was one of the dumbest things I've seen, and it really gets Kirby off the hook for his call in the SEC championship.
Yeah, because this was way dumber.
Yeah, I don't understand how there's not a kill switch with those plays.
Even if
you don't want to burn a timeout, I mean, there's got to be something where you tell the players, like, if you see this or don't see that, then just kick the field goal then, even though that still wouldn't have been optimal. But but at the end of the day, if you're like Alabama and you want to, like, we're not kicking a field goal here, you've got this historically great offense, leave it on the field to get those 6 yards. That was even like part of, you know, the criticism of the play in the SEC title game. It's like, okay, you want to go for it there. Like, I would still trust Fromm in the offense. Mm-hmm. Then faking a punt in that situation, which ended up getting snuffed out because all of a sudden Bama notices, like, that's strange. There's Justin Fields and DeAndre Swift.
They're not usually in the punt protection team.
Odd seeing them on the field right now. But then last night, it's like Bama didn't do anything like that, but it was like watching their kicker plow through there as the lead blocker.
It was very strange.
Yeah, against what was essentially Clemson's defense.
But that's a problem. It was just a poorly designed play.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. Nick Saban, you think intelligence. You know, you think he's smarter than you. He's a better coach than you. He knows these situations. That is one of the most poorly designed fakes I've ever seen. Yeah, let's take our tiny kicker and have him run up the gap as the lead blocker with our third-string quarterback who's not very fast running in behind him.
Well, then it was just, I mean, you looked at Clemson the way they were lined up, and it was like, Clemson is lined up.
Base,
like they're,
base defense.
They're prepared for you to potentially fake it here, and I don't understand how either you just went ahead and went, you know what, just kick the field goal, or you call a timeout and do something else.
Or even like pooch punt or something.
Just
that's what I thought Fields should have done. Like, once they realized the play wasn't there, you talk about that kill switch, just let him, I mean, it's a lot better than, you know, what have actually happened. He could at least kick the ball somewhere down the field.
Well, I mean, that's what, remember Georgia did try to fake in the title game last year, and they had Ramsey in the game, and he ended up, that's what he did.
He
ended
pooched.
Up pooching it, although the thing almost got blocked by Deron Payne. But
right.
Yeah, but there was a way for them to abort the play.
Exactly, yeah. And that's got to be what's in these things. There's also, and you know the head coach has final say on this, but I don't know if Nick Saban or Kirby Smart is the one being like, hey, let's run that fake here. You know, that's probably your special teams guy or whoever. And then
the special teams guy probably designs it and everything.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
But the coach has got to be.
They make the final say.
Yeah, I mean,
and
the coach has got to figure out, like, okay, we need to get out of this.
Well, like, when it's suggested. Like, for example, in the Super Bowl last year, you know, when Nick Foles ran up to Doug Peterson and goes, Philly special. And he's like, really special? Really special? You know, I mean, they discuss these things.
Yeah.
There's got to be somebody on the sideline playing devil's advocate in these situations. It's like, yeah, that might not be a good idea.
Yeah. Or like somebody that says, like, okay, All right, you're probably right. Like, we don't need the 3 points here, are pretty much useless. The better option is to try and get 6 yards and go for it. Like,
how put about your offense out there.
How about we leave Tua on the field?
Well, that's the thing. Tua, you know, probably still, I think, should have won the Heisman. I think that was a pretty big overreaction, giving it to Murray based on one bad performance from Tua in the SEC championship game. That being said, there were multiple times where you kind of took him out. Like, there was one where it was when they ended up kicking that field goal where they went for that little, like, weird shovel pass kind of weird gadget-type play down there. And it's like, I saw somebody on Twitter use a millennial vernacular, if you will, but they were like, man, why wouldn't you just let Tua cook there? You know what I mean? Like, let him do what he's going to do. And I feel the same about the fake field goal. It's like, at that point, you're much better off leaving the ball in the hands of your all-world quarterback.
Yeah, and I mean, for a good part of that game, it's Alabama. They were moving the ball on that Clemson defense. It wasn't just like a complete shutdown there. In the end, I mean, you could definitely tell in that fourth quarter, Bama, you know, their spirit had been crushed, but they dominated the first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
But Tua had they threw a pick six, and then you know, Clemson hit that one long pass on that third down, and they punched it in the end zone later. But by the end of the first quarter, it felt like, you know, Bama was really in control of that game. But they false started on, like, the one-yard line, ended up having to settle for a field goal there when it was, 14-13. Of course, Bama missed an extra point. That's another classic Saban special teams moment. But they had a chance there to punch in a touchdown and keep going. But then it's only 16-14. But I thought the real backbreaker really was when it's 21-16, Bama's running it well again, and then Tua throws that second pick. And, mm-hmm. I mean, because it really looked like Bama was marching to, like, okay, Clemson scored, now it's going to be 23-21. And it had the look of one of those games that was just going to be back and forth. But
it
after
did.
That, yeah, but after that interception, boy, that was when Clemson, it just, the switch went on, and just like that, it felt like a game that was going to be 23-21, and then it's all of a sudden it's 31-16 instead.
And that's the thing. I feel like in the media coverage surrounding this game and the aftermath, I feel like it's been way more about what did Alabama do to lose this game. And we got to give Clemson credit, man. They went out there and stomped on them. Like, they're the ones, just as much as Alabama did dumb things to lose the game, Clemson did a lot right to win the game, including having full faith in a freshman quarterback in Trevor Lawrence to let him kind of fling the ball around, a lot more so than Georgia had confidence in times at Jake Fromm last year and letting him do the same kind of thing.
Lawrence was unbelievable. Clemson was unbelievable. There was one play where Lawrence stood in the pocket with Isaiah Bugs,
mm-hmm.
like just like a heat-seeking missile coming at
future
him.
Future first-round pick.
Yeah, and Lawrence just delivered this missile and then got hit by Bugs, but Bugs wasn't able to even knock him down. Mm-hmm. And that's like, Lawrence is 6'5", 6'6".
The prototype. I mean,
yeah.
You look up, who was the guy from USC that his dad like tried to make him like the
Marinovich?
Yeah, Todd Marinovich. The problem is, you know, there's obviously other things involved. Trevor Lawrence is what Todd Marinovich's dad wanted Todd Marinovich to be. You know what I mean? He's the prototype quarterback. Speed, arm strength, size. I mean, he's got every tool.
Well, and it's like, you know, you're beginning the podcast here, and you is the, you know, I know, half kidding, is the Alabama dynasty over? Like,
yeah, that wasn't a serious question.
I know. The thing is, like, let's say even if it was, it's almost like, it's just like, it's like a drug cartel at this point. You're trading one problem for another.
Right, because Clemson's up here now.
Yeah, right? So it's like, okay, let's say the Alabama dynasty was over. Well, then, all right, then, you know, we got Pablo Escobar, but now, well, there's a new cartel that's just going to take
El Chapo's
his place.
El Chapo's coming up.
Yeah, so like, okay, great. The Alabama dynasty's over, but now there's the Clemson dynasty
exactly.
You got to deal with now. So, you know, at this point, I'm just sitting back that, well, maybe when we finally get rid of Clemson, then George will be the next one after that.
Mm-hmm. But again, Lawrence was incredible last night, as was that Clemson defense. And not having Dexter Lawrence and that not mattering, that's scary. But that is one thing for Clemson going forward. All of their defensive line is getting replaced. So,
and I think they lose four of their five starters on the offensive line, too.
Right.
But they've been recruiting at an unbelievable level, and also those guys are taking steroids, too, apparently.
Well,
SARMs.
That is true.
SARMs is a hell of a drug.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to take a quick timeout now, get a word in from our sponsor, Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen, and come back with more here on The Crossover on 960theref.com.
Friends and family piled around the table, sharing big cheesy slices of pizza, golden baked calzones and strombolis, platefuls of zesty lasagna. It's not Nana's Kitchen in Southern Italy. It's Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville. At Fully Loaded, you'll find all these Italian favorites like wings, salads, and hoagies. A full bar and patio, too. Family dinner, date night, or hanging out with friends. Get more out of it at Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in the Manders Crossing Shopping Center off Mars Hill Road in Watkinsville.
And we're back here on the crossover on 960theref.com, presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville. Thanks to them for their participation and presentation of this podcast. Talking about players leaving, that'll bring us in to our second part of the podcast here, the crossover on 960theref.com, presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville. Georgia had a very rough weekend this past weekend. Well, rough to start, but then it got better because they got the commit on Saturday from Tyreek Stevenson, a very highly touted DB from down in South Florida. They also got the announcements that J.R. Reed and Rodrigo Blankenship both coming back for their senior season, so that's a boost for Georgia after Friday was really just sort of a murky day. You know, it started with Justin Fields announcing the transfer to Ohio State, and I'll get into that in a second. But then you had the four juniors all announcing within the span of a few hours that they were leaving. Isaac Nauta, Riley Ridley, Mecole Hardman, and Elijah Holyfield. And those are definitely going to be tough positions to fill. There's no question about it. But I think Georgia's in a good position to fill each of them. Because maybe other than tight end. Tight end is the one I'm a little concerned with. Because you got Charlie Werner right now. And, you know, that's really it in terms of anybody that's been on the team. You've got some other recruits. You had a guy in the last cycle come in. So you've got options that'll replace, the Nauta and Luke Ford leaving as well. But that's the one where it's not as readily apparent who's going to be there to take those spots or take that spot. At wide receiver, Dominic Blaylock also over the weekend scoring two touchdowns in the All-America game, so that's something for Georgia fans to kind of keep your chin up a little bit. I know Jaden Hazelwood chose Oklahoma. All the best to him, but we don't have to worry about that anymore. But for Blaylock to come in, he's going to be a guy that I think has an immediate impact next season. J.J. Holloman and Demetrius Robertson I think are going to be two guys that have big impacts. So that there's the wide receiver. In terms of running back, you know, Zamir White, that's a big question mark. But you've got James Cook, who didn't see as much playing time this past season, but I guarantee you that guy's going to be on the field a lot next year.
Yeah, and I would think Kenny McIntosh is going to come in and get a lot of carries too next season and be a contributor. I mean, a lot of the running back thing is going to hinge on, you know, what Georgia can get out of Zamir White. We'll just have to wait and see because that's just two devastating knee injuries he's had now on both knees. But I mean, we know with DeAndre Swift. I mean, I wouldn't trade him for any back in the country. Fromm is at worst the second best quarterback in the SEC, and Georgia's got an elite offensive line. The Dogs are still going to be fine on offense, and I mean, I like the potential there on Georgia's defense. It's probably going to be when you think about how many of those what will be now sophomores from the that signing class of 2018 that are probably going to end up starting next season. It's still going to be a young defense. I mean, off the top of my head, I can think of. I mean, you're going to have J.R. Reed, Tyler Clark, Julian Rochester, maybe his three seniors who start next year. I mean, maybe David Marshall. But then you're thinking of Channing Tindall, Adam Anderson, Brenton Cox. I mean, both of the corners are Stokes and Campbell figure to be the sophomores that start. So that's, what, five guys right there. I guess LeCown will be a junior. He definitely would be one in there, but I mean, you're looking at maybe almost half of that starting defense could be sophomores.
Still young, and that's a good thing for Georgia. And, you know, I'll say this, too, about the guys that left, and this includes Justin Fields. Heading into the Sugar Bowl, there was definitely an air of toxicity around this program. I mean, and we saw it in the aftermath of the game. There was definitely some division in the locker room because we saw some guys after the Sugar Bowl putting things on Instagram and such about riding, we're dying with number one. You know, Justin Fields, I think Akil Crumpton put something out there. And I do think there was a divide in the locker room. Like, now that all of this is starting to come out, maybe some of the me guys looking at Fields, maybe even looking at Riley Ridley a little bit. Now that they're gone, you know, I'm not putting Holyfield in this. I'm not really putting Mecole Hardman in this. But there were certainly some guys that seemed to be more about themselves. And again, all I'm going to say about Justin Fields here is he's gone, and that's great for Georgia, at least in terms of focusing on Fromm and really putting all your eggs in that basket. But it's very strange to me that Justin Fields came into Georgia, thought essentially, at least what it seems like, that he was just going to be handed the job. It didn't happen. After week two, there's video of him coming off the field kind of mocking his use against South Carolina. So his head just never seemed like it was really in the right place. And then, you know, you start to see all this stuff come out, and he ends up choosing Ohio State. And after the Rose Bowl, Tate Martell, the guy who's been the heir apparent at Ohio State and a very highly touted high school quarterback recruit, was asked about Fields, and he basically said that he 100% thinks he's going to be the starter next year and that he doesn't care to get to know Justin Fields. So there's already some icy stuff starting there. But my point on Fields is, so he comes to Georgia without any sort of expectation of maybe not getting the job. He thinks he's just going to waltz in, compete, and get the job. He doesn't. He's not happy about it. So he's going to go to a situation where he's not guaranteed the job either. Like, you would have thought he would have picked somewhere to go where there's no heir apparent at quarterback, because it seems like he just wants the job handed to him.
Yeah, I think going to Ohio State, like, if he's eligible to play next year, if he gets the hardship waiver and he can play,
which it seems like he's going to get it.
Yeah, like, that's the guy that's going to win that job. And there's a big difference.
Well, you think so, but it's not guaranteed.
No, but
and Martell was a super highly touted recruit.
Yeah, but I know the thing that Martell is forgetting when he keeps, you know, blasting Fields on social media is when Fields committed here and Fromm was coming off a season where he played pretty much every game as a freshman, I mean, with the exception of the first three series before Eason got hurt of that Appalachian State game, and led Georgia to the SEC title and the national championship game. Martell hasn't done that at Ohio State. I get he was highly recruited, but there's a big difference in Fields coming here with what Fromm had done and Fields going to Ohio State. But I mean, my sense of being, you know, Ryan Day is the new coach there and has obviously gotten Fields to come to Ohio State, knowing that Haskins is gone and knowing what they've already gotten Martell, that Fields is going to beat Martell out and start there.
I would think so, but here's the thing, and this shows how shady this whole situation has been. Dewan Mathis, the guy who Georgia got to flip from Ohio State to come here, basically to replace Justin Fields. Mike Griffith did an interview with him, Mike Griffith from DogNation.com, did an interview with him, and Dewan Mathis said that Ohio State told him they were not going after Fields, like, when he was getting here, but he read the tea leaves better than that and ended up, because he said he had the two letters of intent, like, right in front of him, and he called Ohio State and said, hey, are y'all going after Fields? They said no.
Yeah, well, of course they did.
Well, of course, but that's dirty.
Oh, of course it is.
That's straight up
Ohio
dirty.
State we're
because
talking
they
about.
Could have ended up signing him and then brought in Justin Fields. Good for Dewan Mathis to read between the lines and not fall for that, but that's ridiculous. So if they're shady enough to do that and be like, no, we're not going after Justin Fields, and tell him that, but then he goes the other way anyway, they're probably shady enough for Ryan Day to have told Tate Martell, oh, don't worry, you're the starter, because Tate Martell's been asked, you know, did they pretty much tell you that? And I don't think he said one way or the other, but with his amount of confidence in thinking, oh, I'm 100% getting that job, and that's a direct quote from him after the Rose Bowl,
yeah,
certainly interesting. And then the way that Ohio State has handled this business, you know, maybe the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree from Urban Meyer to Ryan Day.
Yeah, my guess is Fields is going there. He's going to win that job and be the starter.
I mean, he has a very good chance to, but certainly he's going to have to beat out Tate Martell, who's already had a year in the system. So Fields is coming in a little bit behind the eight ball. But if talent wins out there, great. More power to Justin Fields. He's not here anymore, so I don't think we need to talk about him anymore unless we're talking about Ohio State.
No, we might end up seeing him. But the way I have it figured, next year the playoff will be Eason in Washington, Fromm in Georgia, Fields in Ohio State. Then, of course, I mean, Clemson.
That would be insane.
I mean, Clemson's an auto for the playoff the next 2 years.
That'd be insane if that's how it ended up. But I think you talk about Georgia and for next year, and we've talked about the holes and all that stuff they need to fill. That's all well and good, but because of what they've done in recruiting – and you said this about Alabama. Guess what? I still think Georgia is going to be in the SEC championship, just like you said Alabama is going to do the same thing. I don't know if Georgia runs the table, but I do see them winning the East and getting back to Atlanta.
No, it's the same thing, though. Although Alabama, you know, lost a much more important game last night than Georgia did, losing the Sugar Bowl on New Year's night. But, you know, it's like this, all of a sudden you lose this game and it's like, boy, the sky is falling. But when you just sit back, relax, take a deep breath and realize, like, this, for the Sugar Bowl, that didn't represent suddenly a downward trend for this Georgia program, and it doesn't represent it for Alabama either. In fact, I mean, for both cases, I think it's just going to, like, sharpen all parties involved. And, yeah, I mean, I completely expect that the SEC title game again next year, we'll be watching Alabama and Georgia play again and for a trip to the playoff.
And again, you mentioned the Sugar Bowl. I just feel like there was a toxicity cloud, like, around the program kind of leading up to and a little bit in the aftermath of that game. And it felt like maybe a little bit of a cleansing was necessary. So with some of those guys leaving, I feel like, you know, we can now turn our attentions fully to 2019. And what Dwan Mathis is going to look like at G-Day, right?
Well, you know, listen, knock on everything we've got. If something happens to Fromm, we're going to really wish Fields didn't transfer.
Of course.
But if Fromm stays healthy, if there's a silver lining, I hated the way Georgia used Fields last year.
It was so awful.
And, you know, you hate that you have a situation where, you know, like, Fromm didn't play well against LSU and Fields never got in the game. And then it leads to this dissension where, like, hey, well, if you're going to play this guy, why doesn't he give it a chance to come in this game and maybe turn things around?
The usage of Fields and the way they used him is what I think caused that locker room split that I was
talking
about.
Well, it was just like, you know, it was the way that there wasn't, like, you know,
There's no rhyme or reason.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times you see that and, like, okay, well, you're going to get a series now. But it was like all of a sudden Fields would come in for a play.
Yeah.
And then Fromm would be back in the game. So, I mean, I don't remember what game it was, but there was one game this year where Fields came in and then we're third and one.
And they put Fromm back
in. And he got sacked or something. And then it's like, well, it seems to me like third and one would be where you'd leave. If you had Fields in the game, you would just go ahead and leave him in there.
Yeah, certainly bizarre. But I'll say this, you know, as we get ready to depart on this episode of The Crossover here on 960theref.com, brought to you by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville. Our parting shot today, Texas. You need to leave Bevo in Austin. I don't think you should bring him to other stadiums anymore.
No, I completely agree. And
another thing, even in Austin, like, he knows that surrounding. He's familiar and comfortable there. You brought him inside a building and you corral him with little barricades that anybody could break through, let alone a giant bull.
Yeah, surround him with a bunch of strangers.
Flashing cameras.
Yeah.
That was a stupid, stupid idea.
It was, and this is one of those deals, too, where, like, and I get it with PETA, the times that they've been so outrageous,
they can
it's hard
up,
to take them seriously.
Yeah.
But no, they're absolutely right when it comes to Bevo. Now, Uga's like a tiny dog.
They're 100% wrong when it comes to Uga. Like, Uga's a little dog. He's not hurting anyone, and he's fine.
No, it's a pet or whatever. He's very well taken care of. But when you're talking about a 1,700-ton animal,
you can't control that. You can't domesticate
that. No, he needs to be. If you want to have him as your live mascot, do like LSU with Mike the Tiger and have him just be somewhere where people can come and look at him and
whatever. They don't take Mike the Tiger in the stadium.
No.
Do they?
It was,
I don't think.
No.
Okay.
No.
I don't think so.
But with, I mean, Bevo, and then, yeah, I mean, he's inside. Yeah, I mean, that's...
Well, I just thought, too, it's like, and they were like, oh, well, it wasn't because the dog was there. Bull crap.
That steer's horn.
He saw Uga and was like, get out my face.
Went right to where Uga had been.
Yes.
Like, boom.
So for that stupid handler to be like, oh, it wasn't because of the dog, you think we're stupid? Because he went right for the dog. And, like, that's the thing.
Imagine he had gored Uga.
Or a person.
Uga, more important to me than a person. Like, to me, like, they wouldn't have been able to play the game.
No, they probably had to cancel. But in all seriousness here, you know, that's unsafe. And if four adult grown men can't keep Bevo from doing that, then, yeah, it's time to retire that tradition.
No.
Like, here's the thing.
And people say,
Uga's,
like,
fine because he's a little dog. He's a pet. And he's domesticated. And he knows how to behave.
Right.
Bevo is a wild steer. You can't domesticate that.
And then,
you know what I mean?
You know, and then it's like, well, they're tranquilizing the poor thing just to get it to, you know, try and relax when it is in
horrible.
Those situations. Like, I the idea, too, like, they're treated like kings. Like, well, what, because he's not going to get slaughtered and eaten?
Right.
But otherwise, no. Now, an Ugg is treated like a king, yeah, but what dog isn't?
Yeah. And you got to, and again, you have to tranquilize that animal to keep him from going ape bleep,
yeah.
If you know what I mean. So again, I just thought that when that happened, it was a really dumb idea from the TV networks. Oh, we got to create this moment where we have the two mascots meeting. Have you ever seen the old trope from like cartoons back in the day where like a mouse will walk by an elephant and it freaks the elephant out?
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened here. A little dog goes by the bull, and the bull's like, what's that? It's in my space. Get it out of here. And it freaked out.
Also, I mean, Ugga wears that red sweater.
Oh, God. That, I didn't even think about that.
And, like, bullfighting, that's where they get to get the bull all angry.
That's right.
Is that red?
That's right. So, again, it had nothing to do with the animal. Hey, handler, shut up.
Yeah.
It definitely had to do
with
it.
That thing tried to kill Ugga.
Horrible. But even if it wasn't Ugga, like if you can't control that thing, it has no business being in a football stadium.
No. And well, that was a hilarious pen that was set up for it,
yeah,
too.
It was made with the same barricades that you see like protect like wrestlers from the crowd at like indie venues.
Yeah, I know.
Those barricades can't even hold like Cactus Jack's weight, let alone a damn steer.
A beer, yeah, a 1,700-pound steer.
Other than that, the Sugar Bowl, I mean, that just set a bad precedent, obviously, for the Sugar Bowl when Bevo did that. I mean, that was pretty much a microcosm for the game. But just to end the show today, University of Texas, if anybody out there is listening, it's time to retire Bevo, or at least don't bring Bevo out of Austin.
Yeah. Also, you're not back. Try not losing to Maryland, and then you might be able to claim that you're back.
Parting shot from Chris Braham. I like it. That'll wrap things up on this week's edition of The Crossover, our first that is presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville. We look forward to a great partnership with them going forward, including another location opening up soon. I don't want to spill too many beans.
Well, you can never have too many Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen.
No, you cannot. So for Chris Braham, I'm Sam Franco. Thank you so much for listening. Back next week. Another episode of the Crossover Podcast presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville right here on 960theref.com.
You've been listening to The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Braham, presented by Fully Loaded Pizza Kitchen in Watkinsville on 960theref.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.